Getting ready to parent a church, and as my wife already said, there's no experts. We're gonna throw some things your way. You want to write some things down? Awesome. At the end, we'll have 15 minutes or more of just let's talk. Let's go around the room. What kind of questions can we unpack? And Tom will have all the answers. That's pretty much how it works here in
this
room.
He's like, I'm leaving. Forget it. I didn't want this.
Right. What I love is, and this is in the description of the class, that everything God created was meant to reproduce and multiply. And that includes his church, right? Healthy organisms grow, right? So I have an issue, and it's going to come to fruition here in just a little bit. I love taking care of my grass at home, and so we fertilize it, make sure there's no weeds. I have a push mower. It's not a big lot. It's a small house, small lot. But I bought a striping kit for my push mower. Like, I'm next level. Like, I want it to look like Progressive Field. And so I make sure I go this way, and then I go sideways, and I try to get the checkerboard pattern in my little lot. What happens is, when we water it, when we fertilize it, when we make sure we aerate and we cut it, it grows. Because it is an organism that when you bring health to it, its natural tendency is to grow. And so me and a landscaper friend of mine, we have this joke, because the company that fertilizes our grass, anywhere he cuts and it's been fertilized by this company, he goes, it's like the grass is on steroids. Or maybe it's just healthy. Mm-hmm. And when it's healthy, it grows. And so that's what we want to talk about with churches. When we're healthy and we want to parent, the natural byproduct is the church should be growing. It should be multiplying. And so we're just going to talk a little bit. What does that look like to parent a church? What does it look like to come alongside of an existing church, or maybe merge? What does it look like to go into a brand new community, different context of churches, whether that's a dinner church, whether that is a parent-affiliated church? We're going to talk about anything and all of those things. Here's the thing. There's no set formula, but we do have a mandate. Mm-hmm. There's no set formula. It's not 2 + 2 = 4, because it can be 1 + 1, and then we're going to figure this out, and we're going to multiply here. And so that's what we want to look at. What are the practices? What are the practicals of making sure we can bring the gospel into every city, every town, every neighborhood here in the state of Ohio? So we're not going to be discussing, you're not going to hear things today from us like, hey, we're going to talk about the Bible and the Word and prayer. We're all in this room with the same understanding.
That, like, we're all Christians.
We're all Christians.
We're doing that already.
We're already
right?
doing that. Those are given. So yes, before you ever want to be a parent of a church, before you ever want to plant a church, you should be saturating that bad boy in prayer every day, all day, and making sure that's the Lord's will. But we just want to share just a few practical things in regards to what does it look like to be a parent of a church.
So we're going to take it today from the aspect of the way that we parent our own children and kind of carry over some of those principles into parenting a church. And the first thing that we'll need in being a parent-affiliated church is a tremendous amount of humility. Invest stock in humble pie. Like, that is probably the thing that if you're going to get caught up any way, shape, or form, that's going to be your area. And so you know how we want what's best for our children. We raise our children. We want them to have more than we have. We want them to be able to stand on our shoulders, go further, farther, faster than we can. We need the same thing for our teams that we're building. We need to be willing to let them go further than us, to let them shine more than us. They need the same opportunities that we would want to give to our children. So I have had the privilege of having one of my children on staff. There was never a time where I felt like, oh, she used something I taught her at home, and now she's saying it and getting the credit for it. I was just happy she had learned something and used it in the right way, right? Same thing for the people that are on our teams. We need to let them shine. And this might sound basic, and it might be like, yeah, we get it. But wait until it happens. Wait until you're actually in the moment and somebody is like standing up front giving your talk and like, wow, that was great. And their name's getting plastered on social media and they're like, oh, and you're like, okay, it's good, right? So we want to make sure that we are not jealous when our team shines, that we cannot be jealous when they are shining, when they are given opportunity by the way that God ordained for them to have opportunity. It was never us to push them up on our shoulders. It's always God's desire, right? And so making our hearts ready for those moments.
Yeah, because there are going to be those moments where your team is going to get the credit for something you built or invested, whether that's a system, whether that's a process. I love systems. I love process. We have way too many policies because I'm like, oh, that needs a policy. We can build a system for that. And how are we going to navigate this? And so you design that. And then you hear people talking. And you're like, it's a good thing, right? It's a great thing, right? When someone's sharing an idea you had, it happened for us just a few weeks ago. Someone was like, I just love this about your church. And it was something to do with young people on the platform. And then it was like, yeah, that was great. And they were like, yeah, oh, so-and-so was talking about how they love how they were able to do that. And that was an idea that we've been sharing for a year. Mm-hmm. And then it was implemented, and it was like, oh, that was really cool. Yes, it was really cool, and it worked really great. But you have to be willing in humility to go, hey, we're going to have great ideas, and somebody else is going to get credit for it.
And you have to be mindful in your responses with that as well. I remember standing and what he's talking about. Somebody had just said, oh, I love, and I won't name names, so we'll just say Pastor Lance's for the sake of this conversation. I love Pastor Lance's heart for developing this and the way they've been so strategic in it. And I was like, okay. This was my response instantly. I was like, I have been training this person for 18 months and it's finally happening, right? That's the natural sinful desire, and let's call it what it is,
yeah.
The sinful response. But the response was, yeah, I'm so proud of their leadership. Isn't it awesome how they are raising up the next leader? You have to be willing to be open-handed and give it away.
Yeah.
Yes.
You have to be open-handed with it.
Yeah, I mean, as you parent a church, so the question, you know, is, well, what happens if another one of your campuses outgrows the sending location or the first campus? I'm like, that's a problem?
Right.
Like, that would be an issue? Like, I would love that. And they're like, well, then does that church become the main location? I was like, no, we're all on the same team here.
Yeah.
We're still one church in multiple locations, and I hope that another campus outgrows,
mm-hmm.
out-sustains, outlasts, invests so highly in their community that and so relational that it's wham, and it's growing like crazy. I hope that happens. But that's humility.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they're better than you. No, we're better together.
That's right.
That's what we are. And so this is not my quote. This is my wife's quote.
No,
I just happen to share it. We have to understand that on our best days, we point people to Jesus. On our worst days, we point people to ourselves.
That's right.
And that's with our teams. Like, it's not to point them to us. And look what we've done. Look at this system. Look at this process. Look how cool. Look at this awesome Easter idea we have. Easter has nothing to do with our creativity. It all has everything to do with the cross.
Yeah.
And so we're always making sure we're pointing people to Jesus and not to ourselves. And it's no different when you're planting or parenting a church. We want to make sure we're doing that. So we got to have some humility.
And the next thing is, you have to be intentional with leader development. And the way that we have talked about our leader development at Radiant Life Church specifically is through the context of a pipeline. So instead of building blocks going up, you can only build so far before a structure starts losing its stability. Pipes are meant to move and to continue to flow through. Anytime a pipe gets clogged, what happens? Like, it's not good for anyone or anything. Things get real messy real quick. And so leader development needs to keep moving. There needs to be constant flow and motion through it. And so with us, the way we have developed our leader pipeline is, and there's a whole nother session on this, but think through where your people are and recognize that if I'm struggling with humility and they're trying to flow through the pipeline and I'm the thing that's clogging them up, they're not moving any further past me. If I'm struggling with raising up leaders, they're not moving past me. If I'm struggling with needing to be the person who's up front all day, every day, getting the attention, they're not moving past me. If I'm the one who is really, really struggling because, man, I want this to be done this way and it matters, that's my thing. They're not moving past me. But recognizing that if I'm like, okay, open hand, I'm going to be on the outside of this, and I'm going to let people just move and grow and get to where they need to be and recognize what their strengths and their abilities are, and things start flowing. It makes room for more opportunity. It actually makes room for the leaders we want to develop. We do come from a long-standing American church history. I'm going to not get on my soapbox here very long, where the pastor is the one. Like, oh, you see them, they're it, you want to look like them. The busier they are, the more visible they are, the more successful they are. Look at them, how they can do 50 different things. It's so awesome. Such trash, according to scripture, right? That's not the model. And because that is what has happened in our American culture, what we've done is we have capped the leadership capabilities in our local churches because it's about us. It's not about equipping the saints for the work of the ministry, which is actually our job. And so, again, being willing to be humble, take a step back, be able to look at other people and go, wow, what can we pull out in you? How can we let you shine? Because we will never be able to plant campuses without leaders for those campuses, without the next department leaders. The church is very good at producing doers, people who can run the play, run your play, and do the task. But we are called to equip the saints for the full work of the ministry, not to do tasks. And so how are we going to talk about that?
Well, I think it's important for us to realize that nobody owns a ministry.
Yeah.
You don't want to see your children competing for love in the home. You don't want to see them competing with anything. The same way when you're parenting a church, we're not here to compete with each other. We're here to complete each other. Mm-hmm. So there is no, this is my team. These are my people. So as we get ready to launch our third location and, our giant email goes out to all the church and there's a little blurb, hey, you want to be a part of the Orville launch? Click this button, sign up. We've already sent out and we haven't really even had an interest meeting because it doesn't launch until September, but we've already sent out over 40 people. And those people have started signing up. And I was like, your first thought is, oh, those are some of our best. Awesome.
Yep.
That we can give our A game away. Mm-hmm. That we can send. Because, again, we're in this together. And so it's leader development. But here's what I will tell you. This has happened. This is the third time now it's happened where we planted a campus. And we've sent. Because you want to be senders. You just don't want to be like, hey, good job. Get out there. Go make it happen. No, we're sending our best. And go. First week, we sent 45 people to our Orville location. Mm-hmm. Our location in Wadsworth, that day, our second service had one empty parking spot. Mm-hmm. And our attendance has not dropped. And I went, I was like, whoa, what happened? I thought for sure our attendance is going to be like, burr, 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 right? Because we just sent 45 people out. But one of our board members was like, I feel like we're in a season of, we just need to put all of our empty jars out and allow him to pour the oil in.
Right.
And the more jars we can bring, the more people we can send, the more he's going to bring. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. So it happens. And you would think I would know this by now, but I'm all tough-headed. So, but it's great to see. And so we need to make sure
can
that
we just
understand
pause for
that
a minute? You did hear him say that, right? Like, I just need to have a wife moment in the room.
Yeah.
You heard it.
Yep.
You heard it first. I am tough-headed.
So I would say this. When it comes to leader development, start building your leadership team before you need them.
Yeah.
Your systems, your processes that you have in place, what you're building upon for your current location, that system and that process is getting you the results. That system and process is built to desire, right? And so as you grow, as you thrive, and you're like, what got you to 50 will not be what gets you to 100. Mm-hmm. What gets you to 200 will not be what got you to 100. You have to constantly be developing leaders and building teams to get you to where you want to be, to see your desired outcomes. You have to change the system and process which you're building upon. And that means you have to develop them. I would say go to Angel's session about leader development. You'll hear so much more about that. But you need a different process in order to develop leaders quicker. So that way you're launching, right? And those teams are already built. Like, nope, it is 40 people are leaving. Okay, we've created all of these holes now. But we got people to fill them.
Yeah.
Because we've been building for the future, not for where we're currently at.
Yeah. Good. So, and I would say ask everyone to be on a team. Beyond that, And make sure that your team leads, the people who are serving in ministries, know that we are building teams. That their job isn't just to run those plays, but they're also looking and recruiting for team members as well. Nobody owns a ministry. We talked about that. But don't give people an out they're not looking for. This is something that in our church we have struggled with, and this was a big issue for me. For a long time, it was, you know, you were a sinful heathen if you weren't at church five nights a week if the doors were open, right? Like, yeah, that was the culture that we grew up in. You got to be here, this. And if you're not at Tuesday night prayer and if you're not involved in that, then are you really? And you're not up, you know, Sunday night, you missed because you did a family thing, you wretched heathen. So we had that experience for a while. And so for when our church was smaller and we kept that, we didn't keep that mentality, but we kept the mentality, we will never do that to anyone. We will never push that. We will not shame people into serving. We will not. But for a while, us protecting people from serving, because ultimately that's what we were doing, put a lid on our growth.
Right.
And so we have to recognize our heart is never to shame anybody into serving, to make them feel less than capable of serving. But we also can't give them an out we're looking for. They deserve the right to say yes or no, whether or not their schedule can allow for it or not. We're not the ones who dictate their capacity in serving and in ministry. And so we don't have to carry that. You know your heart. Keep an open, pure heart for that. Don't shame them. Be okay with them if they say no. Like, hey, we'll follow back up. I know this is a busy season. No hard feelings. Whenever you're ready, let us know. But don't not ask because you're afraid to push too much on them. Again, we are all called to be a part of the work of the ministry. And if we're more protective over their schedule than they are, that's probably an issue on our part, not theirs.
Yeah, so we want to make sure we're developing leaders, developing teams. We want to make sure that when we're parenting a church, that humility is the thing we're looking for first. The third thing would be develop a healthy relationship. Now, what I mean by develop a healthy relationship, I mentioned this at the OCMN retreat just a few weeks ago. For us, we want to get to know all of our team, all of our staff. And so parenting a church, if we're going to parent a church, I want to make sure that my brother or sister who's going to be the campus pastor, I know them and I know them well.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just a part of a team. They're a part of our family.
Right.
And family gets to know one another. Family spends time together. They spend time outside of work.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Work is a great place. Like, the hallway conversations are great to get to know people.
Mm-hmm.
But spending some time outside of work is so, so important.
Yeah, and get to know the people in their lives. So for those of you who have raised children, especially in the teenage years, you want to know who their friends are, right? Like, you want to know the people who are influencing their life, who they're spending time with every day at school, who the kids are on their teams. Like, you want to know a little bit about them. It's the same thing with our team members. Don't just get to know the pastor or the person you're raising up, but get to know their spouse, get to know their children, invest in who they are, know their strengths and their weaknesses, not so that you can belittle that, but so that you can cover that, so that you can put people alongside that go, okay, here's this weakness here, so they might tend to be too sharp in some areas, we're going to give them a really soft, cushy, like, leader that's going to stand right by to just smooth out the edges. Or maybe this person has a hard time having a backbone and leading in this moment. So we're going to raise up and put somebody there next to them that can help them go, no, you got this, right? So for those of you who know my team, there's several of you in here. I tend to, like, be overly cautious and not wanting to hurt anybody's feelings. And then one of our other team members is like, well, I'll just tell you like it is. We really balance each other really well in the office because we want the same thing. We're very much aligned in heart and in vision. Our approach is very different, but putting us both in a room together makes our team stronger. It's okay to do that. It's okay to cover each other. Nobody has to pretend to be somebody they're not. But we would never be able to have the effective ministry that we have without building that relationship, without taking the time, getting to know each other, being a part of each other's family. I can see how our team members interact with other people based on the way they're interacting with their own children or with their spouse. All of those things translate, so it's important to be in the mix of it all.
And you got to find some practical ways to connect outside of the office, right? Everybody has to eat.
Mm-hmm.
everybody likes certain foods. And so you find out what somebody else may like and you take them out to eat. We try to connect with individually once a month with one of our staff members and just take them out to lunch. And hey, how's your family? Right? For our annual, yearly evaluations as a team, the first three questions are all personal. We start with those. And why do we start with those? Because we want to make sure what's most important. Hey, we appreciate your job. I love what you do, and we're going to talk about that. But how are you? How are your kids? How are you doing emotionally? Like we want to know these things, and we want to make sure we're connecting there. And so we got to get outside, right? Get outside the four walls of the church. Get them, as Angel said, get to know their kids. Get to know their what they like. Our worship pastor, he's a Star Trek, Star Wars guy. I'm not Star Trek, Star Wars guy. I love sports. He doesn't like sports. You know what he does like? Music. You know what I like? Music. Oh, Phil, hey, did you listen to this new song? We don't have to. We find something that we can talk about, something we have in common. And then you just connect. And then you go from there and you begin opening dialogue because I really want to know, how are you? How's life? But we find something and you jump into that and you have that kind of conversation. So connect with them as much as you possibly can. Number four, what do we got?
All right, be a safe person.
What does that mean?
That means, can your team talk to you about hard things? Will your defensiveness be the thing that responds? Are you the kind of person they can have hard conversations with? And I think we all want to say yes. And the reason I want to talk about this, and again, we started with humility on purpose. Because when we are in ministry and we are pouring our blood, sweat, and tears into something, and we know how much we are sacrificing in our personal lives and our hours and what we're giving, oftentimes as a parent, you have seen and know things that they aren't seeing and knowing because they're not in those other aspects. The first response in our humanity is often going to be, well, you don't know what you're talking about. Well, I already did, like, a defensive, quick response. Are you capable of hearing it, not having an immediate response, chewing on it for a little bit, and praying about it before responding? And I know that seems super basic, but I'm telling you there is a level with which we need to go, huh, right? So what does that look like? This came from you in a session you went to years ago, and it's been so beneficial.
Yeah, so it's, you know, whatever is being communicated to you, is there any truth in what's being said? Or is it even possibly a perceived truth?
Yeah.
And so your rough edge, your flesh side wants to just respond. But if you will pause and go, tell me more about that. So I'm a processor. It takes me a while sometimes. So we're sitting in meetings and I will forget to communicate and my wife will pick up the slack for me and she will say, oh, Lance isn't ignoring you. He's thinking. Because I forget to go, hey, can I have 30 seconds? That's a great question. Can I have 30 seconds to just process before I answer? Because I want to make sure I'm handling it right and I'm trying to, as fast as I possibly can, filter and go, what are they really saying? Can I lower my defensive posture before I respond? Because this is an important conversation. This is, they're feeling, if someone is feeling and being vulnerable with you, you don't want to be like, and squash that down. You want to be a safe person where they can. And so the is, let me think about that. Let me take some time to process. And it's okay to say, is it okay if we, can I get back to you?
Yeah.
Can I get back to you with an answer on that? Because that was a really good question. And I don't want to respond with a quick answer. Because you're way too important. And that question was way too important. What did I just do? I built them up. I appreciated them.
Yeah.
I said, I see you. But I want to make sure I care so much about my response. I want to get back to you with the right response. And so we have to have those times to do that.
Yeah. And there are times where they're going to be right and we're wrong. Like, can we just call out the elephant in the room? There will be times when they see something that you don't, as much as how I started on the front end of this point, where we're like, we have background information. We have other things that we're privy to, but somebody didn't want us to know the secrets of their life. So no, we can't raise up that leader because I had a conversation that it's inappropriate for me to tell you about. But no, right? There are times that it's going to be that way, but there will be times when they have some information. Be thankful that they're excited about the vision. Be thankful that they want to move forward in planning churches with you and in taking the vision of your church to the next level. So make sure that we have an open hand to the fact that we don't know it all. Be a safe person that we're able to receive.
I would say, too, with being a safe person, so our next location that we're launching here in September and being a parent-affiliated church, we are merging with a church that the existing pastor is staying on our staff. He's been there, the lead pastor, for 20 years. I don't know if they've done much decluttering in the past 20 years. And so they've kept a lot of stuff. And so now we're coming in and we're renovating, and they're in the room and they're in the building. And they're handling it great. But what we keep asking, and Angel's great at it, what we keep asking when we see Pastor Chuck and Susie, in case you're listening to this, yeah, we're talking about you, is how are you? How are you feeling with all this? Because we're the new guys. They've been there for 20 years, and we're just grabbing stuff and throwing it. I mean, we filled a 40-yard dumpster in less than 3 hours. And that was not big stuff. Anything that was burnable, we lit on fire. Like desks, doors, you name it. Like throw in the burn pile.
We did
like,
burn some crosses.
We burned crosses.
We're like, I'm sorry, Jesus.
Yeah.
We had like 17 wooden crosses laying over from every katana that's
fire.
Ever been.
Pulpits,
I know.
Wooden pulpits. We burn it. Right? We just light this thing on fire.
I'm sorry, Jesus. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
There are still three up and on the wall in the front of the worship center.
It's okay. I was the jerk who told somebody, don't worry, this is not the one Jesus was on. We're good. Okay, let's pray. But here's the thing is we care so much about them that we want to make sure they're okay.
Yeah.
And we want to be safe people for them to be able to go,
this hurts.
This hurts. And I'm struggling. Because for 20 years we've had this mindset or this culture and now we're just watching it literally go up and some of it go up in smoke. But we want to be safe people to where when they're having a tough day, that they could be vulnerable enough to share, hey, we know you're our lead pastors now, but this is really hard for us.
Yeah.
How can we help? Mm-hmm. And so we want to be those safe people. And so when you're parenting a church, you don't you want, as a parent, your kids to come to you and have conversations with you? Like, I don't want my children finding out everything about life on TikTok.
Right.
Because it's a lie. Mm-hmm. It's not true. Trust me. Some of the conversations, I was like, I always start with this. Like, you watched a TikTok video, didn't you? I was like, because that is not true.
And they did research.
They did research. TikTok, yeah.
They did research.
It's crazy. But we got to make sure we're safe people. What else? What's another practical tip?
Are we relevant? Because we do need to be relevant. And just like with our own children, we need to change with the seasons of life. We need to change with the seasons of our ministry, with the seasons that our teams are in, that our staff is in, that your department leaders and coordinators are in. The same way that you would not address your teenager the way you did things when they were a toddler, our ministry should be growing and in the same way that as we're raising our children, that they grow. Like we will outgrow the way we did things. We will outgrow the way we used to explain things. We will outgrow what people are capable of if we're continuing to build in leadership. So you can't necessarily, you know how, okay, let me just talk to you about two of my children. The two that just got married, maybe they'll listen to this, they'll know who I'm talking about. Of the two, one of them is strong-willed.
Kiki, right. Talking about you.
Strong-willed, like came out of the womb wanting to be held a certain way, as like a 9-month-old baby would taste the spoon, like what was on the baby's, and then like, oh, I like that. I would put dessert on the front end and then like the vegetables on the back of the spoon. That's how much strong will, like as an infant, it came out that way, right? The next one, so incredibly just passive and tender, do what they're told. So my first one was like a, you will do that. Like there was not a whole lot of, like, I try to give you choices, but at the end of the day, now you just got to, right? The other one, I had to parent like this. What do you want to do? What do you think is best? I could not in any way, shape, or form have a hard or heavy hand because I would have crushed her. Because she was so like, I'm disappointed in you. She's already hating her own self because of that. Our teams are the same way. We have to be relevant to who they are and to where they're at. We have to know who we're talking to. We have to know what changes have happened in their life. Oh, now they're at this season. Now they need a little bit less of mom to make that decision because they need to bear the weight of the consequences of that. So be relevant to where we are in their seasons of life and be okay with that. Because the culture changes in our church as it grows. Our culture changes in our community. The way that we did things 10 years ago in Wadsworth, we absolutely can't do it the same way. Not even just as a church, our community has changed. So be relevant to what's happening in our church, around our church.
So you have to study it. Yeah. Study relevance within your team. Study relevance within your community. I love that Alan Tomer in here. You want demographics of a city. Mm-hmm. You're thinking about launching another campus in a different community, and you're going to be, you know, they're going to be a pack of yours. Get to know the heart and the DNA of that community. Because even though they may be the next city over, it can be drastically different. Mm-hmm. So ask, they can put the demographics together, the population, the density. We have every city outside of Wadsworth is so drastically different. You may drive 3 minutes this way and you're like, now I'm in a community called Rittman. And what is Rittman all about? And you're like, oh, this is not Wadsworth. Mm-mm. You may drive 10 minutes the other way. I can be in Akron in about 12 minutes. Akron is drastically different than the suburb of Wadsworth. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, then you can go north. And next time I'm in this little town called Sharon Center. Sharon Center is a farm. It's got about 1,500 people in it. It's a farming community. Do you know what else it is? It's one of the wealthiest cities because the farms have been bought out by millionaires. Executives from like Smucker's all live in this little community. You drive back in these and you're like, oh, that's a $2 million home. And that's like, Miles Garrett lives in Sharon Center, right? And you're like, oh, it's a little bit different. In this area, it's going to take a little bit different community.
Yeah.
You have to know that about where you're at. You got to know your team. Mm-hmm. Like, so you got to know your city in which you're going to be planting in or parenting in. Like, getting to know your team. I think we've done every test known to man, mm-hmm. from Myers-Briggs to Wavelength to StrengthFinder to Enneagram to
DISC.
And then we just finished Working Genius by Patrick Lencioni. Like, we've done all those as a team, and then we sit down and talk about what are you, and what's the strength, what's the weakness, how do we help you? Because we want to know how best lead the people we're working with. So we're doing that as a team, but we also have to do that as a community. And you got to make it, you got to contextualize it.
Yeah.
What we do in Wadsworth, we can't do in East Akron. Mm-hmm. So we have our second location as a dinner church. And we love dinner church. We love the model. A Sunday morning proclamation style church where we're at in East Akron is not going to work because they're not getting up that early to come to church on a weekend. But on Thursday, they're packing out the place. Here's the problem we're running into now. This past Thursday, we just had it. We had like eight new guests show up. They were all kids with no parents because they're walking across. We're strategically located across from government housing, and they're walking across without parents. And we're going, okay, we're going to have to pivot and shift here because we're seeing more and more kids coming without parents. Mm-hmm. We have to be rethinking, what are we doing with kids? How are we handling kids? Because
yeah.
This is different. So then it's like, we may have to change the model. We have to be fluid, right? Isn't church planning? You got to be fluid. You got to be flexible.
Right.
Because things are going to change and they're going to change quickly. And so we got to make sure we're doing that with our team and with our cities.
Yeah, and just like with our own children, we need to get involved in their lives. We need to get involved in the communities. If you are thinking about packing a church, going into a new area, get to know the community. Know who they are. See where they're at, not where we want them to be. I was born and raised in Medina, Ohio. It was an easy town to grow up in. I liked the culture. When I first moved to Wadsworth, it was like, wah, wah, for me, like it wasn't where my heart was, but I couldn't make Wadsworth what I had grown up in. So I needed to start seeing Wadsworth for what it is, start looking for the good that was in Wadsworth, start seeing what the strengths of Wadsworth was. And then also recognizing the weaknesses. What do they need? What is Wadsworth missing? if I'm going to be here, if I'm going to pastor in this community, what are they missing? What are the greatest needs? And then going where they are, right? We never really wanted to be a church where people would just come to us. Come to our building. Come see what we have. But how can the church be involved with what you're doing? So they had a need for a cheerleading director for all of their youth sports. So there was the opportunity to be present with over 150 families in the community. I was a cheer coach in Medina, so I was like, I'll do it. Stepped up. That is the number one way our church began to grow. Not because I was like, come to Radiant Life Church, but because I was there rubbing shoulders with, spending time with, meeting needs, being a light, talking about Jesus. I never have any shame about where my faith or my joy, oh, you always seem so happy. And that's just the Jesus in me. If it's good, it's God. I'm saying this to people who have nothing to do with Jesus, but they know me. They know that I'm there for them. They've watched me coach their kids. They see how I correct their children. And so those opportunities happen because we took time to get involved in their lives, right? We went to where they were.
You know, what's interesting is out of that, we became a gold sponsor. I believe it was a gold or platinum. I can't remember. But we donate from our church to the Youth Football Association every year. And even though she's no longer the cheer director, we still do. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is because of the package, we get our logo on like a team jersey. And so there's little kids running around with Radiant Life Church logo, like on their practice jersey. We get announced at every home football game as their sponsor. We're the only church that does that. Here's what's crazy. This happened last year. Inside the Wadsworth Youth Football Association, every month they celebrate their sponsors. It was like, hey, we're going to celebrate Radiant Life Church. And they tag Lance and Angel Perepsky. This is a secular organization ran by people who are not Christians who said, if you're ever looking for a church, you want to go to their church. Like, we're getting promoted in a Facebook group with thousands of people by a secular organization. But that all happened because you said yes. She said yes to get involved to where they were at. They didn't come to us. We went to them. And so you got to get involved. Find ways to get involved. Meet your city leaders. Go to your school system. We did something this year where we're like, hey, we're getting in the schools. We're contacted the superintendent. Hey, we want to help. How can we help best support you? Can we help take on a school? Every month, we want to bring something to your teacher's gathering, your teacher's room. He was like, yeah, could you start with this new school? These parents or these teachers really need it. They started a new academy in our town for children who have gotten kicked out of every other school. Because it's their behavioral issues. They have
padded walls.
They have padded room,
in one of the
rooms where they put kids who get really aggressive. So every month we've been in there. We take them lunch. We take them dinner. We take them Starbucks. We take them gift cards. You name it. Like, I'm texting the principal. Hey, how can I pray for you? She's answering. Hey, could you pray? Could you please pray for this one parent? They're just struggling with their son. Yes. No names. Like, we got HIPAA rules, right? But it's just, hey, can you pray? Yes. This is not, hey, come to our church. Look at what we have for children with behavioral issues. No, this is, how can we go to you?
Yeah.
So find ways to go meet people where they at. It's almost as if Jesus gave us the model to go meet people where they're at. And so just be faithful to that. Go meet them where they're at.
Yeah, that's good. And don't clip their wings. Don't clip their wings. This is fresh season for me with my children at the ages that they are. That the mama heart in me wants to be like, can you please just, when I said I wanted you to grow up and be strong, independent women, what I really meant was I want you to grow up and live next door to me and have Sunday dinners and we hang out a couple times a week. Like, that's what I meant in my heart. Stay close because I love you so much. But ultimately, we know that our children are capable when they're ready to move out, when they don't need to live next door to mommy and have mommy answer all their questions, and when they just want to come home and hang out, but not because I don't want them to go, I don't want them to experience life. It's the same way with our teens. We have to be prepared to let them fly, to let them have that thing that's beyond you, to let them go to the next level of their ministry with or without your name being attached to it, with or without your church's name being attached to it. Ultimately, we're creating a model where our hope is that we raise up leaders from within our church to be able to be our next campus pastors, to be able to be our next youth pastors, to plant in the next city. Because culturally, we feel like if we could raise them up from within, then the transition and going out will be a little easier because they know our heart. They know our preferences. They get it. They've been a part of that thing. But if somebody is like, okay, I've reached my capacity here, we have to, again, have this open hand. Like, God, you'll bring what needs to rest, and you will send out what needs to fly. We have to be willing to release and give our best away. That's in people. That's in ministry. That's in all of the areas, in the preparation. Be willing to give your best away, and that includes the ministry that you love the most personally. So there are things that we're going to want to hang on to because it's our A game.
Yeah, so give us an example of how you've given away personally your A game, like your very best.
Oh, yeah, so, and I'm telling you, this is probably my biggest struggle if we're talking here in full transparency and vulnerability. My sweet spot in ministry is connecting one-on-one with people, seeing people, sitting at the table with them, and people just being very vulnerable and just open with me. So counseling through that typically comes a little bit more natural to me, but I know that's my A game. And as we're a church of now a little over 500, I can't be that for everybody. And I was running myself right, because I'm like, I'm such a terrible pastor. I don't have time for all these people. And like all this pressure I'm putting on myself, but that's my A game. And I'm looking around the room, and there are people that either are not super into that are like, that's not my strength, or they're just not capable. Like they don't know. So our team will like, Angel gives the best advice. She just knows what to say. And I really don't. I'm like, Jesus, I don't know. I got nothing. I'm just going to love you, right? But I've had to start saying, oh, so-and-so, I would love, can you meet with so-and-so? They'd be really good at that. And internally, I'm struggling with, oh, they might be a little rough around the edges. I've got one, oh, they're just going to affirm them, and they're not going to challenge them, right? Like these areas that I know some of that might happen. But what that looks like, guys, is it's me saying I need a savior in their life. Right? That's ultimately what I'm saying, is I'm the best for them. I'm the one who's got it. I need to have my A game. I need to have, and although I don't mean that, that's ultimately what we're doing. What's that thing that each of you have that you're like, I know I'm the best at this? And it's okay to say that, because I'm just as equally open to going, I'm terrible at tech. Call Matt Kelly. He's the one. Like, I'm okay with that. But each of us have that thing that we know, whether it's you're the best communicator or you're the best at developing systems or you're whatever that looks like, can somebody else come to the table with you? And an easy way to transition that then looks like, hey, do you mind when we have coffee, do you mind if Pastor Kim comes with us? Because then Kim is learning how I'm responding back. She's sitting at the table. Kim knows she's there because I need her to know how to have these conversations, but that other person doesn't realize it. So now I'm not just counseling somebody. I'm teaching somebody how to love, correct if need to be gentle where it needs to be, but just be open-handed with that. So don't go into any situation alone when you first give away your A game. Bring people with you. Let them be a part of that process. But find that thing and raise up 10 others just like you so that you don't have to be the savior in their life.
Yeah, it's really good. So don't clip their wings. You got to let people soar. You got to let them out of the nest. So we're going to jump into some Q&A. Before we do, I would just share this. When it comes to being a parent of a church, right, just like with your children, that's kind of how we built this model of how we parent children and being a mom or dad, spiritual mom and dad, and parenting churches. There's all kinds of different models. I love Al's heart and Tom's heart with OCMN. Like, you find the model, let's build it. Whether it's a micro church, whether it's a house church, whether it's a dinner church, urban, from the urban core to rural to suburb. Like, hey, we're gonna build systems that will walk alongside you and help you.
Yeah.
It's scary. I'll say this, and I'll be vulnerable and honest. When God gave us a heart to be a church that would plant churches, I kept moving the needle. I would say things like, hey, when we get to 150, because I wasn't a church, I didn't plant in Wadsworth. I inherited, we revitalized the campus. Our church was 80-something years old. It had gone from 450 to 60 in 10 years. And here we walk in as a church of 60. I officiated 23 funerals in the first 18 months. That's how horrible my preaching was. People are like, I'd rather die. And so it's like, oh, I'm walking into this context. And then God's like, gives us a big vision, and we want you to be a church that plants churches. And so I was like, no. And so I would, as we grew, I was like, hey, when we get to 100, maybe I'll think about it. And I was like, hey, when we get to 125, all I kept doing was moving the needle. Like when we get to 150, when our budget gets here, and I just kept moving the needle going, I can surely keep going as far as I can get this until God's like, come on now. Well, what happened was as I went, I can't keep moving this needle because God has given us the mandate and I have to be obedient. And so he took somebody who was revitalizing a church and helped a heart shift to be a church planter and embedded that. And so whether you're here and you're like, I'm not there yet. God will get you there.
Yeah.
So let me just encourage you. God will get you there.
Yeah.
And you may try to move the needle and say, oh God, I'll do it when. Whether you're a church of 50 or you're a church of 500, he wants you to multiply. He wants you to have a dream and a vision, a birth within your heart that goes, man, is there another city? Is there another town? Is there another people group?
Mm-hmm.
Right? We're seeing in some areas, right? We have unreached people groups in our communities.
Yeah.
Through diversity. You're like, wow, there's no language-speaking church in this area that would minister to them. So maybe God births out of it. You're like, I don't know that language. Find somebody who does.
Yep.
Right? And see if those hearts align. So be willing to do it.
Yeah. We're going to open the floor for questions now, but I do want to just caution, because I think this is probably the biggest fear as we talk with people. It was definitely a fear for us. There's a fear of losing people, fear of losing some of the best that you've invested in, fear of like, what if we don't have enough people to serve? What if we don't have a spot for, you know, somebody immediately to replace this person? That's a real fear, and I get it. We've walked through it. We walk through it every single time this has happened. But number one, recognize that's a fear, and fear doesn't come from God. And because you started with our lawn, we'll go there. Lance loves the lawn mowing and the grass side of things. I actually kind of enjoy gardening. It's peaceful for me to get out there and get my hands in the soil. My garden grows best when I pull some weeds. And even in the healthy plants, those perennials that start growing and they come back every year and then they can start taking over spaces and growing out more. And now they don't even look pretty anymore because it's just one big giant whatever. When you pull out even the good, even those perennials, and you make room for it, it leaves room for more growth. And it allows those perennials to be planted in another place to grow so that they can then be replanted. Mm-hmm. Healthy things grow, but they also need to be dug and replanted in other areas.
That's good.
God will bring the harvest. It is not your responsibility to grow your church. It's his responsibility. Nurture what you have and take care of what you have and trust him with it.
That's good.
Trust him with it. All right. What questions do you have specific to PAC?
So you, Warville, how did that, who initiated what? I know Pastor Chuck was there 20 years. Warville's not necessarily in the backyard of Wadsworth. So how did that?
We had our next location. It was not Warville.
I know. I was shocked. But, you know, how did that, how did they approach you? Did you approach them? How did that happen? Because, you know, since that I knew that wasn't your target area,
yeah.
And then all of a sudden,
like, quick.
What if I told you it happened 5 years ago?
I wouldn't believe it, but
it really did. So that's actually how it started, and I thought it was a joke. So in 2019, I went to Tanzania with a group of people from the Ohio Ministry Network and pastors from around the state. And Chuck Davis just happened to be in our small group. So a large group of us, and then we went into specific districts and did ministry for one of those weeks together. So I had a lot of time, and honestly, I had always known who Chuck was, but we really got to connect like we do on missions trips. We're talking about hearts. He's asking questions, and he's just like, what would it look like for Orville to be a campus of Radiant Life Church? And I was like, ha, 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 and I never took it seriously. I mean, I just also, if you know Chuck, that is more his nature to just be silly and goofy. But then he said it again the next time I saw him. Then he started saying it to Lance. Then he said it again at like a minister's retreat about a year ago, like in a more like, finally he said it several months, like maybe 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And Lance said, okay, Chuck, do we need to have this conversation? Because if you're serious, we're moving and like, we can't partner with you and plan at this next campus at the same time. So if you're serious, we need to know now, because that's going to push the next one back about 12 to 18 months. Okay, let's have a conversation. And that's where it started. But it was him kind of, he approached it because it wasn't our intention to go that way, but it worked.
And I asked, I get the, I'm on your cabinet for health.
Yeah.
For the region, and I just didn't know, like, some of the churches that are struggling, mm-hmm. Is it, or if you're just a pastor in an area and you're like, man, that church is really struggling, is it wrong to be like, hi, or do you wait for them to come, or do you just?
I think we've waited for them, because even with Innovation, Lance was presbyter, and Anthony was struggling, and here's the deal, Anthony is an incredible leader. He's an excellent communicator. He's sharp. It wasn't a reflection of Anthony's inability to grow a church. He did not have the resources that he needed. And he kept talking with Lance about I'm missing this piece. And we knew he had it. So that partnership came out of hearing that struggle and him kind of he wasn't direct like Chuck was. But Lance was like, I'm just going to ask him, what do we think? So it was an open door, but not anything that we had sought out. I don't know, you go ahead.
Yeah, and I think just being around people, listening to them, their hearts. So Anthony, plugging away 7 years, like Innovation and
grinding.
And I said, I was out to lunch with him. I just said, hey, can I ask you a question? Man, a year from now, 18 months from now, Where are you going to be?
If nothing changes.
Nothing changes. Because you're grinding, man. And he was. And he's like, he's like, with no significant change, I would probably be thinking about closing the church. And I was like, oh, man. We're going to lose a great leader. We're going to lose a great leader in our area. And I wouldn't want to see that happen. He's sharp, mm-hmm. right? Because there was a relationship there. Area meetings. So 10-year area meetings. There was relationships, so I knew who he was already, and it was like,
yeah.
I don't want to see him go to Indiana or Illinois or another state. Like, we need to keep him here in Ohio. So what would it look like to keep you here in Ohio? And then just say, tell me what God birthed in you when you planted this campus.
Yeah.
I said, what if that birth could stay alive? What if that dream could stay alive? It just looks a little different. And prayer and said yes. And so you just got to keep keeping your eyes and ears open and being available to people. No joke, went to a area meeting,
not in our area.
Not in our area, but a week after we made the announcement in Orville, and I'm standing there, and this sweet old lady, she had to be 80-something, she's like, oh, you're Pastor Lance. And I was like, oh, Lord, did I do that? And I was like, I am. I was like, She goes, so you're going to Orville. Now, we haven't told anybody. Only our board knows. But this lady, who I've never met before, knows we're going to Orville.
No small town people, y'all. Let's just talk about that. Yeah.
My church doesn't even know this yet. Members of our church don't. And you know. And I said, we are. I said, yeah. She goes, what does it mean to be a PAC? What does it mean to be a campus? I said, well, here's what it means. And she goes, well, our church is small and struggling. Would you ever consider? And I was like, oh, Lord, I don't have this one yet. But is that something down the road? Sure. Is that meant for? Could be. And I'm not just saying you only pack with churches that are small and struggling. It's not.
But, I was going to say, the idea of planning a church is to be in a new community.
Correct.
It's not to revitalize a church. No. That's not the heart of church planning. This is what's working in this season.
Correct.
But that's not the end game. Surely as you're growing and planting churches, you will have people that are like, hey, can you help us? Mm-hmm. But ultimately, the heart is, there's not a church in this community, and we want to be there.
So for us, for instance, we got a giant map where we lay things out, and we go, okay, how can we get to this city? Mm-hmm. sometimes before you get to this city, you got to get to this city.
Right.
Because it's not necessarily that it's easier. It's just more strategic.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna be. It makes the most sense if we want to get here, to go from here and not from here.
Mm-hmm.
And God's aligning that, so you settle into Him. So great. That's how it happened.
All right. Any other questions?
I got a question. Yeah. I think it's important to help us understand how you empower the campus pastor,
mm-hmm.
and make them the hero rather than push your brand,
mm-hmm.
and yourselves, which I see you two do that. Because that is the success, you as Tom and I, when it comes to campus planting, that's a whole unique. There's different types,
yes.
of packs.
Yeah.
But you guys are planting campuses that still get their own identity and their own shepherding. So I think that's an interesting dynamic to explain that.
Yeah, I think for us, it's a couple of things. From the jump, we'll use Orville. Anthony is the campus pastor. He gets way more face time. He gets to be the one to give the really great, exciting news. They know, like, hey, we oversee vision, we oversee mission, but, like, he's your guy, man. He loves you. He wants to be here. So we're cheerleading him, letting him have the wins. It also means that I'm the one to fall on the sword. So right now we're making renovations to a building that's 100, you know, this church is 100 years old, not the actual building. It in some places looks that old.
It smells that old,
yeah.
too.
We're going to make a change that probably some people are going to be frustrated with. And I said, Anthony, make sure that they know that I did that change. Like, I'm going to fall on that sword. He's going to get to be the hero and love the people through that change that might be difficult for them to see. I've got to be okay with knowing Anthony really hates it and it's really helping him out a whole lot, right? But I'm not gonna be there every day. So I'm setting him up to get the wins. And it's just like in parenting, there's a level of I'm gonna fall on the sword in order to help my child succeed. We have to be willing to do that. Prop them up, give them opportunities, let Anthony see. Like, he gets a whole lot of freedom in, he's there in the community, we're not. Shame on us if our humility can't step aside and go, he should know more about Orville than I do right now. He's spending time there. I'm there one day a week. So it's giving him the opportunity and the freedom. But again, you can't do that without step one.
Humility.
Because your humanity is going to get in the way. I don't know if that answers your question
no,
or if
does.
You need to hear it.
Sustainability. Everybody in this room, they're here because they're honestly see it. But sustainability in a church plant, it's so important you can get past the rah-rah and the hype of it all.
Yeah.
And only if you have that humility will you make it through, because
mm-hmm.
as soon as the hype's gone, and COVID was the great neutralizer of that with many of our church plants.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Every leader, we have a leader development, like a master class that we take people through at our church, and it's 7 different leadership books. I tell the class, it's our second year doing it, find the things that you go, man, it doesn't matter what leadership book I pick up, it's going to say this.
Mm-hmm.
Humility is the word you will find in every leadership book. Right? Jim Collins, good to great. What does it separate? It's humility. It's the humility of the leader.
Yeah.
You, and that's why we started with it. You've got to have that humility. You have to die to self and go, this isn't about me. This is about the kingdom. How am I building the kingdom? It is a, like being a video venue, that I think those work.
It's not us.
It's not our personality. Like, we're not going to have a screen and watch something digital. We want a live person there that's going to care for you, take care of you, and preach.
Yeah. The translation of a lot of what we're saying, I think, is when we talk about getting to know the community and then also getting to know your pastors, I think setting them up as campuses and making sure they're successful, you can't really do that without knowing their strengths and their weaknesses as well. So currently we have a new campus pastor at Rosemary Community Dinner who is one of the sharpest guys I know. Like, he could take over the world in urban church planting and in being invested in a community. He does not at all want to have a traditional proclamation style church. Like, it is not who he is. He wants to be in the nitty gritty. Since bringing him into that, like, our discipleship around the tables has massively increased because he just wants to be talking and personally sitting side by side. Anthony loves urban churches, but he really likes preaching. Like, he really likes preaching. He hit a cap there that it was not that he isn't for church planning, dinner church, but he missed preaching. And his heart to get in this lane, he's going to kill it there because he's going to get to do more of what his strengths are. So in allowing them to be the hero, he was hitting a cap not because he's a poor leader, but because he reached his, like, I think I gave it my 100% there, but I got this itch. We could have been like, well, sorry, Anthony, stay there and struggle. But he was like, I really am excited about going here. Okay. So be willing, again, that open-handedness, that knowing your team, knowing the community. Akron still needs a dinner church. It will always need that dinner church. That is for sure. Orville is not going to do well with a dinner church right away. We intend to potentially plant a dinner church there. It won't be Anthony. We've learned that that's not his strength and weaknesses. So make them a hero by putting them in the places that, like, Anthony didn't need to lose a job. He needed to be shifted in his job. That makes sense.
Yeah,
so know your team. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, you play to your team's strengths.
Mm-hmm.
Play to the strengths. Good stuff.
All right. Thanks for being here.